Hey everyone, before we start, I wanted to let you know, if you would like to watch our whole service, head to our website, that's dc2.me, and from the media drop-down, click sermons. You can watch our whole service there. And now, here's this week's sermon.
Good to be here. My name's Rob. My wife and I consider Discovery Church home. My son-in-law is Jake Brown, who often teaches here and is one of the pastors here. My daughters, Robin, and two of my grandkids go here. So it's always good to be here. I was planning to be here today because my granddaughter, Clara, is being baptized second service. And so that's awesome. But I wasn't planning on teaching today. Zach reached out on Friday and let me know he was going to be out of town. Jake was scheduled to preach today, but he's been battling illness all week long, and so Zach's like, hey, can you do me a solid and fill in? I think Jake would appreciate it. I was on the fence, but then Jake, via text, I think promised me a new pair of shoes if I preach today, so I want you to know that my motives are correct for being here, but I love Jake dearly. I really don't think of him as a son-in-law. I think of him as a son, and so the opportunity to support him and be here is great. And I actually thought it won't be that hard. I mean, 30 years of being a pastor, surely I have a heaven message teed up, because that's the series that was started last week. I have a heaven message teed up, and I can just kind of pull that and modify it a little bit. And I'll be doggone if I didn't have a heaven message ready to go. I talked a lot about eternity, but not a lot about heaven. So like Jesus, apparently I spoke more about hell than heaven. Kind of looking into that, I was thinking, like, well, why is that true? I mean, why of all these messages over all these years are there not many about heaven? And I think it ties into something that Zach mentioned last week, is that when it comes to heaven, we don't really have crystal clarity as to what it's going to be like. And I think there's a part of that that really bothers me when I'm teaching or when I'm trying to explain something or help people understand something. I like a lot of as much clarity as possible so that speculation doesn't fill that gap. And so my guess is I kind of shied away from that. I love talking about eternity, not so much about heaven, because a lot of it just felt like speculation. But of course, it's important that we think about it, that we talk about it. And I really appreciate the instruction that Zach gave last week, is just really encouraging us to imagine, right? Get our imagination rolling a little bit, not in unhealthy ways, not getting tied up in speculation, but within the confines of what we have from God's word about what heaven is, and also what's inside of us, what God's placed in us, and begin to imagine, what is heaven really like? And I say what's inside of us because in Ecclesiastes, the writer says, God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart, but even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. And so even though we do not have this entire view of all that God has been up to, is up to, will be up to, all of that, we do have what God is, the thing that God has given us, and that is within our every human soul, there's this God-given awareness that there's something more than this transient world that we live in. And it's interesting because if you think about, based on the reality of death, based on like everything we see from people to refrigerators to organizations, nothing lasts forever. And so unless there was something planted inside of us, where would we even have this concept of heaven or eternity? Where would that even come from? So I think it's evidence that God has indeed placed something in the soul of every human being, that there's more than just this world. Now, the Bible doesn't give us a full definition of heaven, but it offers these glimpses, right? We kind of have these perspectives, and they come across through this metaphorical and allegorical passages within the Bible, and they do help us imagine, man, what can heaven really be like? And this series, I think, is really designed to lean into the what, like what is heaven? What is it? What does it mean? Answer some of the questions that we have, but also the so what, like why does it matter for how we live today and tomorrow? And so in kicking off the series, Zach, I think, initiated our both of those last week by really giving us descriptors and depictions of heaven, that heaven's a real place of perfection, and it harkens all the way back to the Garden of Eden. But then it's also something that we can lean into because the promise of heaven can be very catalytic with purpose upon earth today. And so today I really want to toggle between kind of the what and the so what. And I think I'm going to do that back and forth a lot. I think you guys will be able to track. But hey, if not, no big deal. I'm the emergency fill-in speaker guy. So what are you going to do? All right. So here's what I know. Some of you, Discovery's home. Some of you, maybe you're new to Discovery. Some of you would say, man, I'm a veteran of faith. Some of you would describe your faith as shaky. Some of you would say, man, I'm not sure what I believe. And I think this is a great place to be. Discovery is a great place for you to kind of engage in that journey with like-minded people or people that are also trying to figure things out. But it's also a great time to be here last week and this week and the next couple of weeks, this idea of heaven, because I think all of us, no matter where we are, no matter where we've been, any of those things are like, we can't help but think about the future and what happens when we die. That's unavoidable to really think about that. And so I would ask, like, when you imagine heaven, what do you see? Maybe more importantly, what do you feel? Now, we might typically imagine winged angels and clouds and white robes and pearly gates and an old guy in that white robe greeting us or a judge. Or maybe we just think of it as sort of this green meadow of stillness and eternal bliss surrounded by all these animals that come up and hang out with you. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's this reuniting of loved ones. Maybe that's what you first think about when you think of heaven. But I'm guessing probably everyone in here, everyone that's watching online, I'm guessing, because most people I've talked to, this is true, you've also imagined heaven as being like this never-ending sing-along church service, right? And who's ever thought that, all right? Hands up. Okay, most of you are liars. Okay, good. Good to know where I stand. But I think that's it, because I remember like as a little boy going to Sunday school class, and my teachers would kind of explain to me, like, man, in heaven, it's going to be great because we're going to sit around and we're just going to worship Jesus 24/7. That's what we're going to do. And I'm like, that sounds like a really long, long, long church service, and that sounds actually not that great. But then I remember thinking, I can't think that that's not that great because I think it's supposed to be great. And the teachers are like, you'll love it. I'm like, I don't think I will, right? It doesn't seem that great. And I think John Eldridge, in one of his books, he says that kind of thought about heaven really contributes sometimes to us losing heart, especially as men, and giving ourselves over like, well, life and meaning isn't found so much there, so can we find it in another place? Well, eventually, as I got a little bit older, my vision of heaven began to expand, and I really did imagine it at this place where there was just perfection, no more sickness, everyone was just perfect, and for me, I was an avid basketball player, and I started grappling with, I just couldn't understand, like, if heaven is where everyone's perfect, then that means when we play basketball, like, no one's ever going to miss a shot, and that's going to be a really weird game, but then will that even be true because the people defending those that are taking shot will be perfect and so they won't even be able to allow anyone to make a shot? And so in my mind, it's just like, how the heck is this all going to work out in heaven when it comes to basketball? And that was a great clue that I had this deep theological interest in why I became a pastor, right? And I think it's funny, if we were somehow able to reveal all the off things, the not really correct things that we've thought about heaven, I'm guessing that there would be a lot of humor in that, the things that we have thought. But the reality is that these tainted views of heaven have consequences. Man, lately I've been kind of pouring through different books about Theodore Roosevelt, kind of captured my attention. And one of the individuals that he quotes a few times is a guy named Oliver Wendell Holmes. His kid, I think, became a Supreme Court justice. But he was a poet, he was an author, professor, lectured, all that. But one of the quotes that usually is contributed to Holmes is this: some people are so heavenly minded that they are no earthly good. Now, my guess is some of you, there's some in your heart that you maybe even wanted to say amen to that because you're like, I think that actually can be true. Many years later, the same sentiment found its way into a Johnny Cash song. If anytime you can bring up Johnny Cash, that's a good sermon. I don't care what you say. But his song, The Rambler, says, "You're shining your light, and shine it you should, but you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good." And so I'm guessing in this room, maybe online, there are more Cash people than Holmes people, and that's meant as a compliment. That's good. But the criticism that some Christians are so heavenly minded that they are no earthly good, I mean, it's a catchy turn of phrase, but is it warranted? Is that really true? Well, I think of course it is. Likely all of us at one time or another, we would say, man, we're a follower of Jesus, and at one time or another, we may be guilty of forgetting about the immediate, tangible ways we could make a positive impact on the life of another, because metaphorically, we have our head kind of in the spiritual clouds that may show itself as just being self-righteous or being so involved in all this spiritual activity that we're actually pretty apathetic toward the needs of others. And likewise, there are times in the past and present where those claiming to follow Jesus, not only have they not done good, but they've actually done incredible damage. So nothing that I'm about to say is an attempt to ignore or minimize those realities. However, and I think it's a big however, as C.S. Lewis states in Mere Christianity, if you read history, if you take time and really dive into history, you will find that the Christians who did the most for the present world were just those who thought most of the next. So it was the people who were really focused on what's to come, what does eternity hold for us, they're the ones that were able to make the biggest impact on this world of ours. In heaven, I think, if correctly imagined, not correctly described, like we don't have an exact perfect picture, but if it's correctly imagined, I think it motivates us to take the suffering, the hard things of this life, the difficult things that we face, that other people face. I think it moves us to take those things very seriously. Some of us probably grew up with a theological perspective like, well, heaven's coming someday, so it really doesn't matter what happens on this earth. And I don't think that is the right perspective of eternity or heaven. See, we want to be heavenly minded and earthly good. Heavenly minded and earthly good. And when I say heavenly minded, I mean that we're living with this eternal focus, that we're aligning our thoughts and our values and our actions with God's kingdom over worldly concerns. And all of that is oriented around Jesus and what he taught, what he did, the promises that he made. And earthly good, living out our faith in ways that meet the needs in tangible ways, right? Tangible expressions and reflections of God's love, his justice, his compassion, his grace. So in other words, we're a reflection of God at his best. We are a conduit of those things that God has given us to other people who desperately need those in order to navigate life. As followers of Jesus, that's what we get to do. I was driving in this morning, just thought of this, but cold morning, preaching one Sunday, and in our church where I pastor, we used to meet at this shopping mall center and little strip mall, and like every week, this is way back in the day, obviously, but there would be a person that mostly lived on the streets, and he would be out there every Sunday kind of in front of this, and he'd be selling newspapers, because there's this thing where they would give newspapers to individuals like them, and they could sell them whatever money they made they could keep. And so we didn't really get to know him, but you'd drive past him and drive about another block and come into church, and there was this bitter cold morning, and we have a couple services, and I remember that second service, I look out there, and here is this very distinguishable guy who's all bundled up, drinking a cup of coffee, a beard, and he looks very much like you would sometimes think a person that is homeless looks like, and he's sitting there and is like, wow, that guy actually came into church. Well, I had to leave just a little bit early that day, so I finished preaching, we had some singing, and so I'm driving out, and where this gentleman is selling his newspapers, I see there is this tall, rather skinny lady named Heidi who comes to our church, and she is out there selling his newspapers for him so that he could come in and experience warmth. That's being heavenly minded and earthly good. That's not being so spiritually caught up in things that you can't do earthly good for someone. And I was mostly elated and encouraged and by all of that. And I remember it to this day. That was probably close to 30 years ago. I remember it to this day. But there was a small part of me that saw that felt a little bit ashamed, because it's like, you know what? My focus that whole day was so much on making sure I delivered a good message, so much that I had this spiritual this and I did this and all this, that I was literally no earthly good to someone that was a mere block away to me. And man, that's within all of us. It's within our reach to make that kind of difference. Right? One of the greatest incidents that we have from history of being heavenly minded and earthly good is the movement of early Christianity. And it was incredible how it expanded. And especially during times of disease and plague, there were these two major plagues. 165 AD, about 80 years later, a similar plague. And people were dying, and yet Christianity began to expand significantly. And if you study that, historians cite as a key factor for this growth in people numbers, but even in the influence that Christians had, the early church had at the time, was the Christian response to those plagues that were going on. The Christians, guess what they didn't do? They didn't flee, they stayed behind in the cities where the plagues were the most rampant. They cared for the sick, risking death while others fled. And they did what aligned with their worldview. And if you read through some of the descriptors of what the early Christians did, sometimes you'll see this word like risky and irrational, what they did, right? But if you have a worldview that says this world isn't everything, there's an eternity beyond this world, and I'm living for that, and in living for that, I'm going to do everything I can to bring heaven to earth, then that is not this crazy, impractical thing to do, but it's super rational. And when we're heavenly minded in that way, we end up doing earthly good, and it may seem bizarre to others, but it becomes this super rational way in which to live, because we realize that they realize that only death can only bring them into glory. And so in faith and with faith, they stayed. Many died. But many others owed their lives to these early Christians. And there's a little thing there, it's a side note, but so often we equate faith with going. It's like, man, he stepped out in faith. She really stepped out in faith. And that can be true, but I think we minimize the reality that sometimes it takes more faith to stay than to go. The early Christians, they stayed and they made a difference. And it's interesting, just I was kind of reading through all this yesterday, and it's so fascinating, but it's estimated that those who were sick, just by receiving care, by receiving food and water and a warm blanket and be shielded from the weather, things like that, that their survival rate increased by over 50%. And so think about that. Just by someone caring, all of a sudden it made all the difference in the world, and it was almost entirely the heaven-minded people who stayed, and they became healers and they became heroes that we talk about even to today. They refused to settle for or flee to temporary safety, instead focusing on the eternal hope of heaven. And it resulted in earthly good. Life was lived in anticipation of heaven. It was orienting everything toward eternity. So we can talk about what that might look like, but it's going to change everything if you really get that. Way back in the day, church right pastor, there's a guy who would come, schizophrenic guy, lived on the streets kind of. He was around a little bit. We helped him as we could. Come and go, his name was Sofredo. In and out of trouble, he had a little boy that we kind of helped him with. He literally lived sometimes in someone's tool shed in the back of someone's yard. But I got to know him, got to be friends. And he kind of had done some theft and done this and that and hadn't showed up to court because he didn't really know how to get there. All these kind of things are going on. And he comes to me one day, and it's an afternoon. He said, Rob, I think God's told me I need to turn myself in. I need to turn myself in. And I'm not proud of this, but inside I'm like, no, you didn't. Run. Dude, don't turn yourself in, because you're going to go to jail and you're going to go to prison, and that's going to be a horrible thing. You should not do that. I'm not proud of it, but that was sort of what was inside of me. And he said, well, tonight I want to go do that. I said, okay. And I knew people at the police force. And so I called them. We had it all set up. We were going to show up about 7 or 7:30 that night. It was a rainy, cold evening. And he is just shaking because he knows he's going to do some real time. And he's in the corner. He's shaking. And I'm praying with him. And I'm distraught. I don't know how to help in this situation. I'm literally driving this guy to the police station where he's going to be behind bars for a long time. And he kept saying, he was kind of mumbling it because he was almost in this like trance. He's like, Jesus has got me. And I'm like, I think so. I'm pretty sure he does. I want to believe that deeply, but I'm concerned this isn't fitting as nicely as I want it to. And I remember we got into the parking lot. He said, hey, can we hold up a minute? He said, is it okay if I smoke a cigarette? And I'm like, yeah, give me one, please. You know, right? Let's do that. And I remember that we walked in and he ends up, you know, they were great. They treated him so carefully and great. And he ends up going in there. And then he ends up in jail for quite a while and is able to visit him and all those things. And God did some really great work in his life. And this sounds like I'm making this up. I didn't. But he spent some time. It got cut short. He got out earlier. He comes to me one day. He says, Rob, I joined the circus. And I'm like, what? And he literally went and joined the circus and lived his best life for a while in that regard. But there was something about that where he had this eternal perspective, like, I need to do what's right today. And what's right today is for me to turn myself in, pay the time for the crime that I did. And I can do that knowing that God's got me. Or as he said, Jesus has got me, right? Jesus has got me. See, that's an eternal perspective. And in heaven, that's what it's meant to do. It's to stir us to action. It's to stir us toward healthy living, toward right kind of living. It's to inspire love, to heal our wounds, to heal the wounds of the world. It's not about escaping earth. It's about heaven coming down to earth. And heaven is not just this future promise. It's a present motivator for how we live right now. I mean, what is heaven? If our hearts are right and our minds are right and we're thinking right and we're feeling right and all those things, heaven is the fulfillment of everything that we've ever longed for. It's the fulfillment of that. Imagining heaven right within the limits that we have, within the expanse that we have from God's word, it's to stir us. And a primary source for all that we know about heaven is the book of Revelation. And I think the most critical aspect to grasp when reading the book of Revelation is, well, why was that written in the first place? Right? What's it all about? And it was written with a specific purpose for a particular group of people who were facing really unique challenges. And so when we delve into the chapters, when you read through Revelation, or most people, you don't read Revelation, you read books about Revelation. But when you go down that road, you're in times, and there's these grand cosmic events, we sometimes overlook, well, what was the original intent? Do you know why Revelation was written? It was to encourage and stir the heart of God's people. Not so much to give us a picture of end times. Right, we might mistakenly think of Revelation, man, he was just penned by someone who says, man, here are the end days, here's what heaven looks like, all of that. But John's motivation after he received that vision was to write this letter to Christians who were enduring or about to endure immense persecution and pain and suffering. And so there's this breathtaking portrayal of the final state of the new world. And here's the thing, heaven just isn't for our awe or something to be sensationalized or something that should be just fascinating. It's much beyond that. It serves to prepare. The book of Revelation serves to prepare and equip its readers to live a life of resilience and hope during life, especially the tough times of life. Resilience and hope can be bedrocked in this understanding of heaven and this hope of heaven. The reason is that heaven comes down. Revelation 22, it says, "Then the angel showed me a river with the water of life, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb. It flowed down the center of the main street. On each side of the river grew a tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, with a fresh crop each month. The leaves were used for medicine to heal the nations." Now, there's a lot of imagery there. I'm not diving all into it. I'm just emergency guest speaker today. All right, I'm not diving into all that. But the imagery, you pick up the imagery, right? What's the imagery? The imagery is of healing and restoration. So people say, what's heaven like? You start answering, well, I don't know exactly, but it's about healing and it's about restoration. And we understand that more when we look back at Revelation 21, the earlier chapter. Zach hung out here last week. Said, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared, and the sea was also gone. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband." See, I think many view heaven as really an alternative to this life. But I believe a correct reading of Scripture presents it as a healing and a renewal of this world. At the end of time, heaven descends and it transforms creation. Heaven is this ecosystem of God's glory and the environment of His presence that heals and brings fullness. Everything it touches receives that. The image that John saw that we see that's captured in Revelation, it's kind of this reverse the curse declaration, right? Reverse the curse. Revelation 22 mirrors Genesis. In Genesis, humanity's rebellion brought what? Separation from God, alienation from God, psychological confusion, social division, physical decay, all those things. Heaven, in contrast, represents God's restorative power, undoing the effects of the curse and threatening a new heaven, or, and bringing about a new heaven and a new earth where the old order is no more. And I think some of us will understand that the greatest picture we have of heaven is ourselves. Because we are experiencing, as followers of Jesus, our messed up lives, our trouble, the poor decisions we made, that God takes all of that, He works in that, and He restores us, and He renews us, and He's putting us closer to how we were created to be. See, heaven isn't an escape from this world. Man, did I grow up thinking that. If I can just get to heaven. It's not escape from the world as much as it's a really rehabilitation of it. Heaven doesn't diminish the value of this world, but I think gives profound motivation to confront the sufferings of this world, the brokenness of this world, with hope, with purpose that as followers of Jesus, we have experienced personally. Well, so what? I think you know, but just in case. I know today is not a wedding, but I want to jump to 1 Corinthians 13. And here I think we see this vision of heaven and earthly good intricately tied together. I think despite how we often approach this passage, we have to understand Paul wrote this letter, what we call 1 Corinthians, to this church that was way out of bounds, that was incredibly messed up, that was doing all kinds of wrong stuff. And so he addresses the issues that were major. He's like, okay, spiritual gift stuff, divisions, leadership, immorality, all that stuff, he addresses it. But the thing that most stood out, the thing that he really hammered on was, you know, you as a church, Corinth church, you know what? The big thing is you lack love. You lack love. It was a form in some ways of being really heavenly minded because there was all kinds of spiritual activity going on, but they were of no earthly good because they lacked love. And so this love that Paul speaks of is not this passive thing or something that's just sentimental. It's active and it requires sacrifice. Paul said, if I could speak all the languages of the earth and of angels and didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy and if I understood all that God's secret of all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but I didn't love others, I'd be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. And then he goes on and says this about love. And heaven is in being in God's presence, and God is love. So maybe this is not only how we bring a little bit of heaven to earth, but maybe it's even a window to look into what heaven is really like. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. Doesn't demand its own way. It's not irritable. Keeps no record of being wrong. It doesn't rejoice about injustices, but rejoices whenever truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith. It's always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. In some ways, I think that's a picture of heaven. And then down in verse 13, it says, three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Why is love the greatest of these? In our present world, we need faith and hope, right? We need faith and hope. But we don't need those in heaven because we'll see God face to face. But love will remain forever because God is love, and we'll be fully united with him. Another letter that Paul wrote to the church in Colossians 3 says that Paul implores his readers. Now check this out. He employs the readers. He says, listen, I want you to personify compassion and kindness and humility and patience and forgiveness while discarding sexual immorality and anger and cruelty and deceit, while embracing unity and love and gratitude. And whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, I think most people say that's a pretty good way to live, but how? Because in some ways that seems a little bit impossible, especially in our own power. Well, before Paul says all of that, we go back a few verses, and he starts chapter 3 this way. Since you have been raised to new life with Christ, set your sight on the realities of heaven. And the realities of heaven, we need to stop thinking so much as this physical structure, this physical place, but we need to think the realities of heaven as a world of love and perfection and creation and adventure and great food and great camaraderie and all of that. That's where our mind should be drawn to. So we kind of stop looking down at our phones all the time and we look above, right? We set our sights on the realities of heaven where Christ sits in the place of honor at God's right hand. Think about the things of heaven, not the things of earth. For you died to this life, and your real life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed to the whole world, you will share in all his glory. In other words, when you're heavenly minded, you will be earthly useful. You'll be good. Man, roughly, can't believe it's been this long, about 20 years ago, there was this little girl born who some called Scooter. And she wanted to be a doctor and was well known for placing Band-Aids and bandages on all of her dolls and stuffed animals. And she was quick to point out that words like butt and stupid were unacceptable. To her, when music played at church, it was time to dance, and dance she did. And this precious little girl was nearing her fifth birthday when, to the shock of everyone, her heart gave out. A few days later, I presided over her funeral. And yesterday, getting ready for today, I thought about that moment. And the weekend prior to her death, from their home, her family once again was watching The Chronicles of Narnia. And if you know the movie, it can be a bit long, especially for a four-year-old. And she just kept telling her parents. She just started saying over and over again that she just wanted to see the lion. I mean, I just want to see the lion. Well, as many of you know, in the story, the lion, Aslan, represents Jesus in all of his power and majesty and all of his grace. The one who points to and made a way for eternity. The one who prepared heaven for us. And I remember commenting how heartbreaking but beautiful it was that this little girl who desperately went to bed saying, "I want to see the lion," woke up in his loving presence and protective care. I'm not sure I always know what it means to be heavenly minded, but I think it's something like that. You see, that's the hope of heaven, to see Jesus face to face, to do good today and tomorrow and all days because of heaven. We know it's worth it. And so that's why we share with others. That's why we lean into the reality of God's love and his truth and his grace in our own lives. And we do that imagining that one day this will be reality. John said, "I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, 'Look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them and they will be his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes and there will be no more death and no more sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever.'" God, I pray that in your goodness, you would help us to have imagine heaven well, and that you would allow that to be so profound in our lives that we could not help but do earthly good because of it. God, I pray that you would reassure those that need reassured, that you would open doors to those of us that need open doors. God, that we would take heaven seriously, that we would move beyond structures and move toward what its meaning really is for our lives and for our future. God, thanks for loving us. Pray blessing all these good people here, those watching online. Do that in Jesus' name. Amen.